All right, we're starting with the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Aleph. Amud Aleph, Hamocher Bayit Bebatei Arei Chuma. This is another one of the parshiot that's found in Vayikra Kofei and Parshat Behar, which is when one sells a house in a walled city. When one sells a house in a walled city, they have the right to redeem it for the next year. If they do not redeem it over that next year, then the sale becomes permanent and is never reversed, and the Yovel has no impact on it. The Mishnah is dealing with that sugya, exactly what the dinim are with regards to a bayit bebatei arei chuma. So now it says, a mocher bayit bebatei arei chuma, someone who sells a house in a walled city, hari zeh goel miyad. You have the right to redeem it immediately, begoel kol 12 chodesh. And then you have the right to continue to redeem it over the next 12 months. Hari zeh kemin ribit, venu ribit. It is similar to charging of interest, even though it's not really interest. And that is because if he buys back the house over that year, the assumption being that he's going to buy it back at the same price that he sold it to him, because it's still within that same year. So when he buys back the house at the same price, in essence, the buyer of the house lent him the money in the interim. He basically lent him the money until he returns the money to get the house back. While this is going on, the buyer is living in the house rent-free. So in essence, he has imputed interest here, which is that the rent that he doesn't have to pay during that period of time is the equivalent of earning interest on the money that he's lent to the seller of the house, who's going to give him that money back, the exact same amount of money at the end. So he gave him money to buy the house. He's going to get exactly that amount back. Meantime, he gets use of the house in the interim, and that's the effective interest that we have. Now, it is rebate. The ain't no rebate, but it's not really rebate. The Gemara will discuss why it's not rebate. Part of it is because it's structured as a transaction and not structured as a loan. Because he sold him the house, he did not lend him the money. Then we'll see that there are other factors here that make it that it may not be real rebate, real charging of interest. Meta mocher, if the seller of the house passes away, yigal bino, his son has a right to step into his shoes and redeem it. And the truth is, it's not only his son, it's any one of the people that would inherit him can step into his shoes. If they would be the inheritor, they become now the owner of the property, and they can step into the shoes of the original owner and redeem it within that first year. Mei talokeach, if the purchaser passes away, igal miyad beno, then you can also redeem it from the son of the purchaser or whoever it is the inheritor of the property from this buyer of the house. So it's not limited to the parties to the transaction, it's the parties to the transaction and any successor to the parties to the transaction have the right to redeem the property, both from the mocher side and from the lokeach side. What isn't clear and is debated in the Gemara in Kiddushin is whether while the seller is alive, can his relatives step in and redeem it? By a stay achuzah, as we've seen, the relatives are actually enjoined to come and redeem the field on behalf of the seller of the field. That's what we say, that the relatives should step in order to protect this individual. So that is written explicitly by stay achuzah. Question is, does it also have application by bebatei arei chuma? Is it also true that the relatives, while the seller is alive, can step in to protect him or to help him and to repurchase the house on his behalf? It happens to be a machloket amoraim there. According to most of the Rishonim, the conclusion is that the relatives can redeem it. The Rambam is the one who seems to say that you cannot redeem it. It's only true by estei achuzah. It's not true by bebeit ir chuma. Then the Mishnah continues and says, en monim shana ela misha shemachar. We only count the year from the time of the sale. Shenemar ad melot lo shana, until it completes his year. Rashi over here says that the hava amina would be, if it was sold again, then that would trigger a new start to the year. So the answer is, ein monim shana ela misha shemachar. The original sale date is what drives the year, and not the new sale or any interim sale that takes place after that point in time do not affect the year or the counting of the year. Kishuah merit mima, when it says that it's a full year, and I'll read you the psukim since we're quoting them here. It says, Ish kimkor beit moshav ir chuma vaita gulato ad tom shnat mimkaro, until the end of his year. Yamim tia gulato, he has, yamim here really means a shana, a year he has to redeem it. V'lo yigael ad melot lo shana, which is what we just quoted, and we're about to quote Tmimya, a full year, Kama bayit ha-shabir, asher lo chumah v'tzmitut. Then it will be a permanent sale, the koneoto, the one who has purchased it, the dorutav, for his generations, lo yetze b'yovel. It does not have the ability to be removed or released during the yovel, and the Gemara will darshan each one of those words. The Mishnah is only going to darshan a couple of them, which we already did, ad melot lo shana. Tmima, we said now, is laviat chodesh ha-ibur. Is to include a leap year, so that in a situation of a leap year, the Tanna Kamma believes that you count the leap month as the year. So it's a day to day in a year, exactly to that day, a year later. So that can eclipse 12 months or 13 months, depending on the length of the year. Rabbi Mumer, Litain Lo Shana V'Ibura. It's to give it the year and its Ibur. Now Rashi explains Shana V'Ibura means that a Shana is a reference to the lunar year. Ibura is a reference to the differential between the lunar year and the solar year. Or in essence, you can see this in the Rabbeinu Gershom as well, he's telling him that you get 365 days. You get a shana chama, and as Rashi says in Rabbeinu, that's irrespective if it's a lunar regular year, 12-month lunar year, or it's a lunar leap year, 13-month year. In either case, you get 365 days from the day of the sale. And that is because, on average, all the lunar years average out to a solar year. So in order to get a standard year by which we would count, Rabbi says that Tmima comes to teach you that you use a full year that would be sufficient to cover all the different types of years, and that basically is a solar year. What's interesting is that Rambam in the Perush HaMishnayot says that when it comes to Rabbi's position, he says, in my time, uberet notim lo chodesh haibur, afo pi shimea shana uberet shin pai ve'achad. It's 381 or 383 days. Even though the leap year exceeds a solar year, but the Rambam says that you get the longer of the solar year or the lunar year. So in a regular lunar year, then it would be 365 days because the solar year would be longer. In the case of a leap year, you would get the leap year because that's longer than the solar year. So the Rambam has an interesting view with regards to Rabbi, that you get Ibura, you get the longer of the two. The longer of whether it's the solar year or the lunar year, and that means in a leap year, you'll get the full leap year and not the solar year. Rashi says it's standardized as a solar year according to Rabbi. Now, the Rambam over here says that these dinim ain choshishim l'sha'ot b'dinim eilu. We don't worry about hours with regards to these dinim, that we're going to see in the Gemara, and then we'll discuss with the Balei Tosafot, which is that it's not such a simple thing that the Rambam's saying that. From the Mishnah, it does sound a little bit like it's a day-to-day item, but not necessarily hour-to-hour, and then we'll speak about the Rambam's position, which seems to be differentiated from Rashi and the Balei Tosafot over here. Via Yom 12 Chodesh, Lo Nigala, he reaches the 12 months and does not redeem it, Hayta Chaluta Lo. Then it becomes a permanent sale to the buyer. It doesn't matter whether it's a purchaser or where it was gifted to him. That it is a permanent transaction, meaning it's a permanent gift or purchase by the individual, and it will not be reversed. Now the Gemara begins. Our Mishnah does not follow the position of Rabbi. The Tanya, Rabbi Omer, Yamim. The Pasuk says, Yamim tiye gulato. And so the word yamim can mean in different contexts. Sometimes yamim means days, and sometimes yamim means a year. So in this context, if you read the Pashtu, the Pasuk, yamim means a year. Yamim tiye gulato. 1 year will be his ability to redeem it. Rabbi reads it even more literally that yamim means days. And he says, yamim in plural, and yamim pachot mishtaim, so that you have a minimum of 2 days. So Rabbi never explains what the minimum of 2 days are. Rashi claims that you get a 2-day waiver at the beginning of the year in which the seller cannot redeem it, cannot buy it back. That means the buyer gets a minimum of 2 days, and then he can redeem it for the remainder of the year. It's somewhat akin to the Ste'achuza in which the seller cannot redeem in the first 2 years, and then after that he can redeem until the Yovel. So too over here, the first 2 days are off limits, and he can't redeem it during those 2 days. For the remainder of the year, he can redeem it. That's how Rashi reads the 2 days here. There are others, like the Rosh Mishnah, who indicate that the 2 days mean that you get a year plus 2 days. You get a bonus 2 days at the end of the year. to complete your year. That's what Rabbi is suggesting over here, and that's what the Yamim means, two extra days that are added on to the year. Rabbanan, who obviously disagree with Rabbi, Hai Yamim, my Abdile. What do they do with those 2 days? Mibayale, miyom, liyom. That comes to teach you that the calculation of the year is from day to day. So if you did it on 12th of Nisan this year, then you do it on the year is up on the 12th of Nisan in the following year. Rabbi, miyom, liyom, minale. So then, how does Rabbi know that din of miyom, liyom? This is as opposed to the calendar year, which you would then say that possibly if you bought it on the 12th of Nisan, that your year would be up when you hit Tishrei, and that'd be the end of the year. So, as opposed to the calendar year, we say it's miyom liyom. So that's what Yamim teaches us according to the Rabbanan. Rabbi learns that out from Miatom Shnat Mim Karo. So that he learns out from the fact that it says, Ish Kim Kor Beit Moshev Yerchomai Tegulato Atom Shnat Mim Karo. Mim Karo in the possessive form tells you that it is his sale, and the Shana is based on his sale, based on his year, basically. And so that's how he learns it. Rabbanan Haumi Vaile, Shnat Mim Karo, Shelo, below Shnat, Shel Minyan Olam. So the Rabbanan need that to teach you that it's his year and not the calendar year. So the Gemara says, well, then what do you need Yamim for? Didn't you just tell me that's what Yamim was teaching you? It says, V'yabim mi'baylehu l'me'eit la'eit. That teaches you from moment to moment. So the way that Rashi learns this, and the Balei Tosafot do the similar thing, which is against what the Rambam said in the Mishnah, it means from hour to hour. It means that if you bought it on noon on the 12th of Nisan, then the year expires at noon on the 12th of Nisan in the following year. So that would be the understanding here, that Atom Shnat Mim Karo teaches you miyom liyom, and Yamim teaches you mi eight le'eit or mi sha'a l'sha'a. That's the view of Rashi, that's the view of the Balei Tosafot. The Rambam, which we just saw in the Perush Mishnayot, clearly thinks that there are no sha'ot over here, and therefore the explanation is along the lines of maybe what the Gra suggests over here, which is that normally in these types of situations we say mixatayom kikulo. So the idea of mi eight le'eit doesn't mean that if you did it at noon on the 12th of Nisan, that you have to wait until noon on the 12th of Nisan in the following year, but rather that when it comes to the 11th of Nisan, we don't say that once you've entered into the day of the 11th of Nisan, the year is complete, because it mixed up the Yom Kippur. You get the entirety of the 11th day of Nisan, and that's what mi'eit le'eit means over here. So it's not about hours, it's about complete days. Not just days, but complete days. We don't use mixed up Yom Kippur. So that's the way that the probably the Rambam would explain it, because he does not believe that it's Misha, the Shah. The E, Mi'ad Tom Shnat Mim Karo, because had you just had Mi'ad Tom Shnat Mim Karo, Ve'amino Mi'yom Li'yom in Mi'ad Le'et, no. That from Yom Li'yom would be the case, but Mi'ad Le'et not. For Rashi, the Rotosafot means not to the hour, just by the day. The Rambam, it means you might have said Mi'ksata Yom Kukulo, rather you say it's got to be the complete days. Kata Rachmana Yamim. That's what the Yamim comes to dispel. V'Rebi Mi'ad Le'et Minole. So where does Rabbi learn out the fact that you not only have days, but hours, or full days and not half days? Napkele mitzmima. Because the pasuk says that you get a full year. It says, v'im lo yigel ad melot lo shana tmima. V'rabonon, ha'mi baile li'ibura. That's what they, we saw in the Mishnah, used tmima to teach you that you get the leap year when it's a leap year. V'rabi ha'nami mi baile li'ibura. Doesn't Rabbi need it for Ibura as well, because he also learned Tmima, and that taught him the solar year, which is his Ibur. Hachanami, you're right. That's true. So, Miyom Niyom, Umli'eit Niyeit, he learns out both Miyom Niyom and Eit Niyeit, Mantom Shnat Mim Karo, Nafka. He learns both of those items out of the same Limud, and he thinks that that Limud is sufficient to teach you both the Yom Niyom and the Miyeit Niyeit, and he doesn't need two psukim to do that. So that's the machloket over here. It's clear that Rabbi's not the author of the Mishnah, because we don't have any mention of 2 days in our Mishnah, not in terms of not allowing the lokeach to redeem it in the first 2 days, and not in terms of adding on a bonus 2 days at the end. Neither of those are mentioned in the Mishnah, and that's why the Gemara says that the author of our Mishnah must not be Rabbi. It can't be Rabbi's position. Now, over here, the Gemara seems to conclude that with regards to a Beit Yerchomah, that you get day to day and hour to hour, according to Rashi and according to the Balei Tosafot. The Balei Tosafot over here, they also mentioned it back on Yudchet Amud Aleph when we discussed it there, discuss how applicable is this din to many other dinim that require years. So the Gemara Nidah, which we're going to get to shortly, the Gemara Nidah tells us that there are a series of items that require certain age thresholds that are determined by years. And so there's a list of there, including bat mitzvah, bar mitzvah, nidarim, the korbanot, and beit ir choma. I mean, there are all these items that have a measurement of a year, and the Gemara Nidah seems to put them all together in one bucket. So the Balei Tosafot here say, Perish Rabbeinu Elchanan, the davka bebatei arei choma beinan meit leit l'shaot. That this unique din of sha'at to sha'ah is associated only with batei arei choma. It's not extrapolable to the other things that require a year. And that is because here they have two psukim. One to teach him yom liyom, one to teach him eight late. But in other situations where you don't have that and it only says shana, then you'd only be required to do it yom liyom, would not be required to do it eight late, not from hour to hour. Now that obviously has huge nafkaminot with regards to, for instance, a bar and bat mitzvah. A child that is born at a certain time in the day, then if we would hold that you need me'eit le'eit, meaning from sha'a to sha'a, then their bar or bat mitzvah would not take place until you reach that hour in their 13th year or in their 12th year for a bat mitzvah, for a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah. And you couldn't just say, oh, the day started, now they are bar mitzvah. You'd have to wait until into the day before they're actually bar or bat mitzvah on their birthday. So the Rabbeinu Elchanan claims that this is uniquely associated with batei arei choma. The truth is that the Gemara in the second half of today's daf is going to say it applies to korbanot as well. And we've already seen that before, that in Bechorot, that korbanot also are counted l'sha'ot, but that's it. The Balei Tosafot, on the other hand, say at the end, says, V'atosafot katvu kan, hua din bekulu. This din is extrapolable to anything that requires a year, being in me'eit le'eit l'sha'ot. You need me'eit le'eit l'sha'ot, the ofinan shana shana mi batei arei choma. Because we're going to learn gzeirah shava. That's what the Gemara does on the second half of today's daf with regards to korbanot, that we learn out from batei arei choma, that the shana means from hour to hour. And you would do the same thing with all these other items that require a shana, that shana would also require me'eit le'eit, and that means a bar or bar mitzvah would require to wait until their birth time, not just their birth date, but their birth time in order to be a bar or bar mitzvah. We do not pask in that way the halacha, although there are some briskers that are makpid to wait me'eit le'eit for that, but even amongst briskers, it's not really a common practice to wait me'eit le'eit. But you see the Balei Tosafot here arguing about whether this din of batei arei choma of sha'a l'sha'a has broader application outside of the world of batei arei choma. So now the Gemara says that the Mishnah told us arizuka min ribit. It is like interest, because as we said before, it's effective interest in the fact that he's giving him money, he gets the exact same money back, and he lives for free in the house, rent-free for that period of time. V'hatanya, harizo ribut brumura. Our Mishnah says it's not really ribit, and we have a break that it says it's full-fledged ribit midoraita. Elisha Torah, hitirato. The Torah just says it's permissible. It's gzerat hakatuv, that even though this is interest, the Torah permits it. So how do we explain the Breita's view versus the Mishnah's view? So Rabbi Yochanan lokasha, Rabbi Yehuda harabonan. It's a machloket Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanan in the Gemara in Baba Metzia. D'tanya, Reisha eno shet b'chareo maneh. If he was a creditor and he had lent his friend 100 zuz, basalo sadeo mecher. And the terminology here is mecher, but really what he did was he gave his field to the creditor as collateral. So now the field is sitting in the hands of the creditor. If the seller eats the production of the field, mutar, that's fine. Lokeach ochel peirot, if the buyer, meaning the creditor who now has possession of the field, if he eats the output of the field, asur, that's a problem of basically ribit. For the fact that he's lent him money, and now doesn't demand the return of that money, he's holding onto the field, but not only holding onto the field, he's taking the production of the field. So the production of the field basically becomes effective interest on the loan for that period of time that he's holding the field as a collateral. So that's the view of the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, apizman shelokeach ochel peirot mutar. Even if the buyer really means the creditor over here who's holding the collateral, if he eats the production in the field, it's still mutar. It's not a problem of ribit. And then Rabbi Yehuda brings a case. Amar Rabbi Yehuda maise bebaitus benzonin, shasav zedeu mecher, a situation in which he took a field as a mashkon on 100 zuz that he had lent out. And he did this, api Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. And he did this under the auspices or the approval of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And that circumstance was a case in which the buyer, the creditor, was eating the peirot. Amrulo, the chachamim said back to him, Misham raya? How can you bring a proof from that? Mocher ochel peirot haya velo lokeach. Over there, it was the debtor that was eating the peirot, not the buyer. That's whenever the Gemara, the Tanaic works, bring Misham raya, it's an argument about fact, not an argument in halacha. So here, they're arguing the facts of the case. Was it the mocher or the lokeach that ate? Because if it was the keach that ate, then it would be proof to what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. If it's the mocher that ate, then it wouldn't be a proof to his position. So they're arguing about what the exact situation was or the facts of the case. My benayu, what is the difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim's position? What precipitates this difference in opinion between them with regards to whether you consider this case a case of ribit or not a case of ribit? The answer is, tzad echad biribit enka benayu. In a case where there are two possible outcomes, and only one of the two possible outcomes leads to a case of ribit. In the instance here, let's speak about the case that we have in front of us where the person takes the field as collateral for the loan that he has given. So now there are two possible outcomes to the situation. The person has given him the field and says to him, if I default on the loan and I don't pay you back in 3 years, the field is yours. For now, 3 years come about, and there are two possibilities as to what happens. The debtor either repays the loan and gets his field back, or the debtor defaults and the field belongs to the buyer or to the creditor in this case. So only in one of those two outcomes is there a problem of interest. That is, in the case where the seller or the debtor comes and buys back the field by repaying the loan, in that situation you have a problem of interest. Because in that situation, when he repays the loan, then he borrowed money. 3 years later, he's given the money back. In the meantime, the lender of the money got the production of the field, or basically got effective interest on the loan. But that's only one of two possibilities. The other possibility is that he defaults on the loan. And if he defaults on the loan, then there is a possibility that it really belonged to him all along. Now that happens to be a machloket, a bayin rov and psochim, as to whether a mashkon, you are kone la mafreya, or mikana la haba. From here, it sounds like we're going according to the one who says that it's the mafreya. And Elaim Kane, you say that they specified that the field's transaction would be me'achshav from now if he defaults later on. But given that it would be the mafreya, that means that the buyer over here or the creditor never really took interest because it was his field all along. Because the debtor defaulted on the loan, the field was his all along, and all the production he ate all along was his own production. It wasn't a problem. So you have two possible outcomes. Only one of them leads to ribit. The other one does not lead to ribit. That's called tzad echad biribit. That's as opposed to a loan where it is absolutely certain that you're going to get ribit, you're going to get paid interest. Because no matter what the situation is, he's going to pay the interest, and you're going to get your money back. Again, assuming he doesn't default, but that's not what we're worried about here. We're worried about the fact that he's collecting interest, and in the case of the loan, he's going to collect interest no matter what the outcome is. So that's a case where it's a sumi d'oraita according to Rabbi Yehuda. When it's sadachat mi-ribit, it's mutar according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim disagree and say that sadachat mi-ribit is also asur. That's a problem of ribit. Even though there is two possible outcomes, there is a possibility of ribit, and that's enough to make it a problem mi d'oraita. So Tanakama Savar, Tzarechad Beribit Asur, that's the view of the Chachamim. Rabbeinu Savar, Tzarechad Beribit is Mutar, and that's why he doesn't think there's a problem with this situation with regards to the Mashkon. Now the Balei Tosafot raise over here a specific case that is mentioned in the Gemara and Baba Metzia, which then kind of throws a little bit of a monkey wrench here. The solution to the problem is given one by Rashi there and here by the Rabbeinu Tam. And the difference between them then has nafkaminot as to how we view what exactly is tzad echad biribit. And that is, there's something called mashkanta velo nechaita. That is when someone takes a mashkon, a field as a mashkon, and he takes the production of the field. He keeps the production of the field, but he does not deduct that from the loan. So you could have a situation in which you give a mashkon, and the mashkon has production. So if the creditor keeps the production, but he defeases the loan by the amount of the production each year, then that's fine because he's not taking interest. He's actually using it to pay down the principal. But there is a concept in halacha called the mashkanta velo nechaita, the mashkon where there is no deduction, de'enu ela vak ribit. The Gemara says that that's not ribit midoraita. That's only avak ribit. And the Balei Tosafot want to know, how is that different than our situation over here? Why is it that in there it's called avak ribit, and over here we say that it is called ribit gmura, according to this braita? So how do the Chachamim explain that case over there? So Rashi there makes a distinction between a sadeh and a bayit. And he says that by a sadeh, there's no problem of tzadachat biribit, because there's a third possible outcome, which is, yes, you have an outcome where it could default and it would not be ribit. And have an outcome where he doesn't default and it would be ribit. There's also a third possibility where he doesn't default and it's not ribit because the field doesn't always produce. There's no guarantee that the field's actually going to produce or give you something in any given year, that you're actually going to make money from working the field. Since that's the case, it's not classified as real ribit, but rather avak ribit, because there's a certain amount of risk in the payment that you get because of the production of the field is not a certainty. As opposed to a house, that it's impossible that you're not getting benefit for it. If a person lives rent-free in a house, then by definition he's getting benefit from the fact that it is rent-free. And therefore, the case by a house is ribit to gemura, versus the case by the sadeh, which is only avak ribit. So that's how Rashi makes a distinction between them to explain that case, the mashkanta b'lo nechaita being only avak ribit. In our case here, according to the Rabbonin in the Braita, it is ribit gemura. Now the Rabbeinu Tam says that he doesn't love that distinction that Rashi makes. He says, v'eini ra Rabbeinu Tam chiluk zeh, d'bayi nami ika sfeika. In a house you have risks also. Shema yipol, or yisareif. It could fall down. It could get burnt. Maybe you won't have the house. Maybe you won't get the benefit. Elvadai ein chiluk ben sadeh l'bayit. There is no difference. But now he has the problem. How does he explain the difference between that case of mashkanta b'lo nechaita and our case over here? So the Rabbeinu Tam makes a distinction, which is that the case of mashkanta b'lo nechaita is a case where the field is going to lay fallow with the creditor anyway. The debtor cannot work the field because he's going to give it as a mashkon over to the creditor. So right now the field is going to do nothing. The creditor is going to hold the field and the buyer can't get any benefit from it anyway. He's going to do nothing with the field. Given that, if the creditor in the end then plows it, works it, and produces fruit from it, whatever he takes from it is basically zenenev is a low chaser, because it's not as if you're paying interest, it's because you would have done nothing and you wouldn't have gotten anything from the field anyway. So it's him taking benefit out of the field, but it's not because you are losing out. It's not as if you're paying interest, because you wouldn't have done anything or couldn't have done anything with the field anyway. You can't rent it out because it's under the auspices of the malveh, of the creditor. And that's why it's not called ribit, because it would have been fallow or left alone anyway. On the other hand, on the case where it deals with a house and giving the house at below market rent or giving the house for free, that's in a situation where the house is in the hand of the debtor, and therefore he could have rented it out in the interim, even though it was collateral, like you have by your mortgage on your house, where it's acting as collateral for the bank. But in the interim, the house is yours. You can rent it out. You can do what you like with it. Then if the creditor uses the house for free or at a discounted rate, that would be considered ribit, because the debtor could have gained from it. And instead, he's giving that gain to the creditor. That's called interest. And that's the way that the Rabbeinu Tam distinguishes between the cases. And then the Tosafot comes to the final statement about our Gemara here. Ufi zeh, the Rabbeinu Tam, enu mechalek ben sadeh lebayit, haja kushya leduchte. Now that the Rabbeinu Tam doesn't distinguish between fields and houses, the original question comes back, which is, what's the difference between a mashkanta b'lo nechaita, and we don't consider it ribit gmura, and over here we consider it ribit gmura. And so Tosfot has to come up with a big chiddush to say, v'tzarech lamar, the ribit gmura midrabanan kamar. It says here ribit gmura doesn't mean ribit gmura deoraita, means ribit gmura midrabanan. So then, why do you say then that the Torah was hitirato? He said, oh, it's really ribit gmura, but the Torah said it's okay. Well, why does the Torah have to say, oh, it's okay if it's not problematic min the Torah? It's only problematic min the Rabbanan. So that's how he says, hachei perusho. Since the Torah says that the batarei chuma are allowed, that shows you midoraita, it's not a problem. And therefore, it's only ribit min the Rabbanan. The doraita permissibility of batarei chuma indicates to you that there's no problem midoraita, and when it says ribit, it means ribit gmura min the Rabbanan. That's a big chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam, because his argument on Rashi, whether you distinguish between a house and a field, Rashi uses the distinguish between a house and a field, and he'll continue to distinguish between that, the house over here, Batei Rei Choma, the field of Mashkanta Belo Nechaita. So there it'll be considered not Ribit Gemura, and over here it will be considered Ribit Gemura. According to Rabbi Talmud, there's no such distinction. How does he explain the difference in the terminology used by the Gemara? And yet he says the word Gemara over here doesn't mean Ribit Midoraita, it means Ribit Midorabanan, which is a big chiddush to say that it's only Ribit Midorabanan. Given that, we now have a situation in which Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting that the authorship of our Mishnah is Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why the Mishnah says it's not real Ribit, because it's Ribit Mitzad Echad, but it still looks like Ribit, or it feels like Ribit. The other hand, the Braita says it's Ribit Mura. That's the view of the Chachamim, who say Tzad Echad V'Ribit is a problem, and is a problem, at least according to Rashi Midoraita, according to the Rabbeinu Tam Midorabanan, and that they will be the authors of the explanation of the Braita that we just brought. Now, Tosafot then asks the other way around. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that Tzad Ribit Ribit is Mutar, then why is the Mashkanta Belo Nechaita a problem of Ribit, meaning that if our Mishnah says that Tzad Echad B'Ribit is okay, and it's okay Midoraita, and he allows it by Batei Rei Choma, why is it by Sadeh, the Mashkanta Belo Nechaita, that they call it Avak Ribit? It shouldn't be Ribit at all, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Tosafot makes it clear, and this is an important factor, that even Rabbi Yehuda, who said Tzad Echad B'Ribit is Mutar, he only says it's Mutar when it's done Derech Mecher, when it's done as a transaction and not as a loan. And that's the difference. Over here, with the Batei Rei Choma, it's a transaction that's taking place. It's a sale that takes place. The sale gets reversed, but it is a sale. Because it's done with a sale, and it's only Tzad Echad B'Ribit, the combination of the two of them makes it that it's not a problem of Ribit. By Mashkanta Belo Nechaita, you only have one of these two factors. It's not a Mecher, it's a Halva. It happens to be Tzad Echad B'Ribit, but it's only Halva, and that's why it's called Avak Ribit. So that's an important distinction, which has halachic ramifications, which is there's a big difference between structuring something as a transaction versus structuring something as a loan. Once it's structured as a transaction, then you have a lot more latitude if you find another kulah or another reason to believe that it's not real Ribit to be mekil. If it's halva, then we have a lot less room of maneuverability to make it that it's not considered to be Ribit. Rava Amar, the kulei alma tzad echad b'ribit asur. Rava says everybody agrees that Tzad Echad B'Ribit is problematic. V'hocha B'Ribit amanat achzir ika b'nayu. Question is, if you charge interest with the intent to return it, is that considered to be a problem? Or is that not considered to be a problem? Mar Savar Asur, Mar Savar Mutar. Now who the Mar Savar is over here, the Machloket between Rashi and the Bali at Tosafot, Rashi brings one explanation, the Tosafot brings it as well, and then Tosafot brings an additional two explanations. Rashi's explanation is not the simplest explanation over here, but he says that Tana Didan, the author of our Mishnah Savar, Afilu Tzad Echad Nami Lohavi Dahabitorat Mecher Ateliadeh. Author of our Mishnah believes that Tzad Echad B'Ribit is the Batei Arei Choma is not even classified as Tzad Echad B'Ribit because it was done in a transactional form. The Tana Debraita Savar, Sof Sof, Hoel Ve'Liadeh Ribit, At Tzad Echad, Ribit Gemura Hi. Since at some point it's going to reach a Ribit Gemura, therefore it is considered to be Ribit Gemura, but the Torah permitted it in the end. So what we're saying in the end is the difference between them is whether the structure is a structure of a transaction does something for you. So that's what Rashi says over here. When it's Ribit Almanat Achzir, if it's a situation where it's transactional, does that waive the problem? The author of our Mishnah believes if it's a transactional situation, then Tzad Echad B'Ribit is not problematic, and therefore, the Mishnah says it's not really Ribit. The Braita says, even if it's done in a transactional form, it's still problematic, and that's why the Braita says it's Ribit Gemura, that the Torah was Matir. That's how Rashi explains it. Then Tosafot brings two other explanations, and they seem to be the simpler reading of what you would have thought here in the Gemara. The other possibility is, this is the machlok between the Mishnah and the Braita. Kagon. This would be the simple reading of the Gemara, which is, if when you entered the house and you bought it, you lived there for free because you bought the house, but there's a condition in the sale that if the seller redeems the house within the year, you're going to have to pay the rental income for the time that you stayed in the house. And in that way, it's now a conditional rebate. You're paying rebate, or there is an effective rebate by living there for free, but you're going to reimburse him for that rebate afterwards. Is that sufficient to not be classified as rebate? The author of Mishnah says, okay, if you agree in the terms of the contract to give back that free stay at the end, then that's already not considered to be rebate, and that's why it's not a problem. On the other hand, the author of the Brayta says, even if you agree to give back the rebate in the end, it's still asur mitzum rebate in the interim, and that's why it's asur, but the Torah was matirit. That seems to be a more simple reading of the Gemara about rebate amanat achzir, and one says asur, one says mutar, so that's another way to read it. And the Tosafot brings a third way to read it, which is, inami, amar chada, umar amar chada, velo plige. They each said one thing, and they don't argue. Our Mishnah is a case where he agrees to give back or reimburse him for the rental income if he redeems the house. And the Brayta is a case where he doesn't agree to reimburse him for that. So in the Mishnah, it's not classified as interest because he agrees to give it back. The Brayta, he didn't make that agreement. He didn't make that condition of the sale. And therefore, if he takes it, it's really rebate. It's rebate gemura. And our Mishnah would agree with the Brayta, and the Brayta would agree with our Mishnah. They're just dealing with two different cases. Those are three different ways to explain how Rava says that everybody believes that Tzadachai B'Ribit is a sur, but what is their machloket over here? Rashi says whether a transaction can overcome the problem of Ribit. Tosafot brings two other explanations, either that if you give Ribit on the condition of returning it if the sale falls through, then is that considered Ribit or not considered Ribit, or maybe the Mishnah and Brayta are dealing with different cases, one that has that condition built in, one that does not have that condition built in, and that will make a difference for their positions. Now the Gemara says, Meita mocher yigal b'no. The mocher dies, his son can step into his shoes and redeem it. When it says, Pshita, why would you think otherwise? Ma'u d'teima, you would have thought because the psukim say, Ish ki imkor beit moshav, so Ish ki imkor beit moshav amar rachmana, v'hai lav machar. That the person who sells the house has the right to redeem it. So this son is not the one who sold it to the party. Maybe he should not be the one that can redeem it. Kamash Malan, Vaita Gulato. It says there, it doesn't say that the person who sold it will redeem it. It just says, Stam Vaita Gulato. And as Rashi says, Dimkena Vale Michtav Yigalena. It should have used the possessive form to go reference back to the Ishkim Kor Beit Moshav Yerchoma. Yigalena, he will redeem it. It would have a pronoun that would be the antecedent, would be Ishkim Kor Beit Moshav. The fact that it says Vaita Gulato, which is a generic statement, it just says it will be redeemed. That indicates that anyone can redeem it. Now, Meita Lokeach Yigal Miad Beno, if the buyer passes away, the seller can redeem it from the son of the buyer. Pshita, again, why would you think otherwise? Mao Dutema, you would have thought, Likone Oto. It says here that he has to return the monies to the one who purchased it, which is Vim lo yigel ad melot lo shanat mima v'kama bayit asher be'ir asher lo chumalit smitut lakone oto ledorotav leyotzei be'ovel. So it sounds like that you have to interact with the kone oto, with the one who purchased it, and kone oto amar chmana v'lo kana. And now you're dealing with his son; he's not the one who purchased it. Kamash malan vayta gulato. Go back to the same phrase before, which is vayta gulato. You're allowed to redeem it. It will be redeemed, irrespective of who the parties are. And that's why you're allowed to redeem it from his son. And the truth is that the son of the seller can redeem it even from the son of the buyer. You don't need one of the original parties to be there. You can have neither of the original parties be there, and the transaction would still be unwound in that situation. You only count the year from the time that he sold it. Tarabanan, shana, it says a year. Any idea, im shana l'rishon, im shana l'sheni. I don't know if you count the year from the first one or from the second one. So again, here we're dealing with the situation in which Reuven sold it to Shimon, let's say, in Nisan, and then Shimon sold it to Levi in Tishrei. So when it says that when the shana is up, that's when it will become a permanent sale, is that the year counted from the one who sold it first, Reuven to Shimon? Or is that from the year from when Shimon sold it to Levi? Kishua Mer, Ad Melot Lo Shanat Mima, it says that when he completes a full year, Havei Shana Lirishon. Then it's clearly speaking about the Shana of the first one, or Reuven, who sold it to Shimon in Nisan. That's the year that matters, because it says Lo. That means the Mocher HaRishon is the one who's the Shana that matters over here. Lo Shana, the Lo is referencing back to the original Mocher, and so here's the year that counts over here. The Mi Chalut. To whom does it go permanently at that point? It goes to the first buyer. Yochanan Amar, the Sheni Chalut. It goes to the second buyer. Rabbi Elazar's opinion is that when the first year is up, meaning from Nisan to Nisan, the sale that Reuven did to Shimon, when that happens, Shimon now becomes the permanent owner of the field, because Reuven has now been knocked out of the picture because his year has elapsed. On the other hand, Shimon's sale to Levi is still outstanding. He's only 6 months into his year from his sale to Levi. His year won't be terminated until he reaches Tishrei. That means that Shimon still has the right to redeem it from Levi at that point in time. So the permanent owner is the first buyer. The second buyer is still waiting for his year to elapse in order to become the permanent buyer of the property. That's a simple way to read what Rabbi Elazar is saying over here. On the other hand, the Rosh Mishnah has, again here, an unusual view, which is that the first person who got it, it's his permanently. The second sale that he made, it wasn't his when he made the sale, because it was still within his first year. And that means that he just sold it to the second guy for the period of the year. And that means that until that year elapses, it will be in the hands of the second buyer. As soon as the year elapses, then the second buyer will give it back to the first buyer, and it'll become his permanently. So that's his view of what it means that the Rishon Chalut, according to the Rosh Mishnah, it's the first guy's forever, and remains his forever. The Sheni just gives it back to him after his 1 year has elapsed. On the other hand, the simpler way to read it, the way Rashi reads it, is that the first one, the transaction is terminated now, and he has it permanently. The second person's transaction will terminate in 6 months, so either Shimon has to redeem it from Levi before then, otherwise it also become Levi's after that point in time. Rabbi Yochanan, who has the more unusual shita, says that the second guy gets it at that moment. Bishlam ala Rabbi Elazar l'didei kamanina. According to Elazar, it's pretty straightforward. You count based on the party that is there. So the first one's year is up, and that's why it's kalut to the first buyer, to Shimon, because we count by his year. Ela Rabbi Yochanan, my time up. Why does Rabbi Yochanan say when the first buyer's year is up, the second buyer then gets it for himself? So Amar Rabbi Yava bar Mamel, Mamachar lo Rishon l'Sheni. When the first party sells the property to the second party, he sells Kol Zchut Shedavo Liado. He sells him his rights in the field. Any right that he has in the field, he's now sold to the third party. So when Reuven sold it to Shimon, Shimon now has rights in the field. Whatever rights Shimon has in the field, when he sells it to Levi, that's what he's granting to Levi. That means that he's also Levi's subject to the fact that in the first 6 months, Reuven can come and redeem it and take it away from him. But he's also now got the benefit that if Shimon becomes the owner of the field, Shimon actually sold him that right as well. And so then when the field goes permanently into Shimon's hands, Shimon gave that right now to Levi, and now it becomes Levi at that moment. Alright, so now, Amar Rabbi Ava Bar Mamel. So here comes up the case that you were asking about in the Mishnah. Machar Shnei Batei Arei Choma. If an individual sold two houses in a walled city, Echad B'Chamisha Asar B'Adar Rishon, one of them on the 15th of the first Adar, Echad B'Echad B'Adar Sheni, and the second house was sold on Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni. Zeh Shemachar Lo B'Adar Sheni, the one who sold it on Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni, as soon as the Rosh Chodesh Adar comes up the next year, if this year was a leap year, the next year is not going to be a leap year. So when you get to the one Adar, the Rosh Chodesh of the one Adar in the subsequent year, his year is up. It was from the first of Adar to the first of Adar, his year is now up. On the other hand, the one that he sold it to on the 15th, Shel Adar Rishon, lo alto lo shana, 15 Adar Shoshana Ba. His year does not terminate until the 15th of Adar in the next year. Matkif la Ravina. So Ravina says, well, that seems illogical. The one who sold later, his year terminates earlier. How can you have that? Vele Malay, He says, Ana kodim shachinura mikama didach. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it, it's just a saying, but he's saying, I lit a fire, I had the stove going, the oven going, the heater going in my house. Kodem shehisik yidata bebeitecha. Before you ever put the fire on in your house, and yet I have more time. And so why is it that your house, which you bought later, is now nechlat before my house? Meaning that it seems to be illogical. The one who bought later is actually losing his year earlier. And he says, Damar le at nachit li bura, because you went into the leap year. Which is that you went into the Chodesh Ha'ibur. You went into the leap year. Therefore, you lost out. Because the Torah says Tmima, and that gives you the Chodesh Ha'ibur. But I, who did not go into the year of the Ibur, I did not lose out in that way. What he's saying to him is that the Mocher, the seller, gets the benefit of the Chodesh Ha'ibur. And so, the one who entered into the Chodesh Ha'ibur, he subjects himself to that possibility of there being a longer period of time. So the one who got involved in the Chodesh Ha'ibur, the 15th of Adar Rishon, he now opened himself up to exposure for a longer period of time, because the Shana Tmima on the Mishnah tells you that the Ibur counts towards the year. So if you enter into the transaction any time before the Chodesh Ha'ibur, or even in the Chodesh Ha'ibur, you're going to end up having a longer period of time in which the transaction will remain outstanding and the sale will not go permanent. On the other hand, the person who already passed the Chodesh Ha'ibur and he bought it in Adar Sheni, he avoids that problem because he's already post the Chodesh Ha'ibur. And in doing so, he now benefits himself in having a earlier chaluta, an earlier permanence to the sale. So the buyer on the 15th says to the buyer on the 1st, why is it that you get your house permanently before I do? I was in my house first. And the answer of the person who bought on the 1st is, you entered into the world of Ibur. And once you did that, you exposed yourself for an additional amount of time. Whether you did that before or during the Ibur, you would now have exposed yourself to additional amount of time. I, who waited till after the Ibur, was not exposed to that. So first of all, the Chodesh Ha'ibur, according to Rashi and other places, and according to many places in the Gemara, the Chodesh Ha'ibur is Adar Rishon. That's the extra month that's being added on. And then obviously has ramifications with regards to many items, including when do you have a yahrzeit when there is a leap year. If the person passed away in a Shana Pshuta in the Adar, then when it comes to leap year, which of the two Adars is considered to be the leap month and which is considered to be the real Adar? Happens to be Machloket, Ashkenazim, and Svaradim. Rama thinks that Adar Rishon is the main month. And even though the practice or the minhag is to have the yahrzeit in both Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni, for the Ashkenazim or for the Rama, the more important is the Adar Rishon. Whereas for the Svaradim, they think that Adar Sheni is the real one. And from this Gemara over here, it would sound like that the Adar Rishon is classified as the Ibor, the extra month, which would seem to indicate that Adar Sheni is the real month. And obviously, then, we know that Purim and the Arba Parshiyot take place in the second Adar, but that's because we have a specific limit over there that says we have to be sumichat gula legula. We have to have the gula of Purim close to the gula of Pesach. But that doesn't mean that Adar Sheni, because you celebrate Purim then, and the Arba Parshiyot, is the real Adar. There is a machloket in the Yerushalmi and Shkalim, and in other places with regards to which is the real Adar, and that then flows into the Rishonim as to which is the real Adar. But from our Gemara over here, in Rashi's explanation in other places, it seems to be that the Gemara here is indicating that the Adar Rishon is the Ibur year, although you could just explain the Ibur means that you're still subject to the additional Adar when you deal with more than one Adar. And that's what it means by Ibura. Ibura doesn't mean that you're in the Ibur month, it just means that you're still subject to the Ibur because you're still in front of two Adars. You haven't cleared the Adar. Once you've cleared the Adar, then you don't have to deal with the leap year anymore. You're post the leap year, and now you're back into what is considered to be a regular year. All right, so now the Gemara brings another example that's almost identical to this, and then we'll ask, why do we need two examples? So Amar Rabbi Abba Mamel, Nodolo Shnei Tlaim. He had the birth in his flock of two lambs. Echad b'chamisha asar l'adar rishon. One of them was born on the 15th of Adar Rishon. One of them on the first of Adar Shini. Zeshinolad Adar Shini, the one who was born on the second Adar. Kevin Shigir Yom Echad Adar Shoshana Ba'a. Then when the Rosh Chodesh Adar comes in the next year, which is going to be a Shana Pshuta, so when it comes to Rosh Chodesh Adar, Al Talo Shana. He's already now graduated out of being the first year of his life. Zeshinolad Lo B'Chamishasar Ba'adar Rishon. One was born on the 15th of Adar Rishon, lo ata lo shana ad chamishasar b'Adar Shoshana haba. He doesn't clear his year until the 15th of the Adar in the following year. Matkiv la Ravina. So Ravina says, isn't it a little strange? Ulei malei ana kadem achil yiroka mikama didach. I was chewing on the grass and grazing before you were. The one who was born on the 15th says, I'm 15 days older than you. And how is it that you turn a year before I turn a year? Shem d'amalei. Because he answers him, At nachit li ibura, ana lo nachit na li ibura. I cleared the Ibur month. You didn't clear the Ibur month. Since I cleared the Ibur month, my birthday comes up faster. You who were subject to the Ibur month, takes longer for your birthday to come up. The question is, what is the relevance here of the fact that the animals turn 1 year? Rashi claims that is, v'heim b'chorot, the animals were first born, v'muzhar l'akrivan b'tok shnatan. And you have to bring them within their first year onto the Mizbeach. Tiftim tochlenu shana bishana. It's interesting because that's really, seems like more of a suggestion. You're supposed to do it. It's lechatchila what you're supposed to do. But it's not as steadfast as we find in other areas of halacha, which the Rabbeinu Gershom points out. He says, the inyan tziruv goren shel maser beima. It's a question as to whether you're in the same year for the goren of maser. But then later on, he brings as the source for the Gzeirah Shavah that we're going to about to bring, he brings Set Tamim Zachar Ben Shana, which is actually the description of a Korban of Pesach. And there are other Korbanot, like the Korban of Pesach, and like the Chatat, that have to be in their Shana Rishona. So I would have said, the way that Rabbi Gershom says it, has maybe to do with the Korban of Pesach, but I would suggest that maybe it has to do with the Korban Chatat. When is the year up, in order for it to be classified as no longer being Ra'oi to go on Mizbeach for that year? Or, the way that Rabbeinu Gershom says it is, when does he turn into an ayo? He's now a tlet, or he is a set now. When does he turn into a ayo, which is the new level after 1 year? So that's the question here, because of his kashrut, the gavei korbanot. Certain korbanot, like an asham, require an ayo. Some require a keves. So, we want to know, when's he a keves, and when is he an ayo? So that's determined from day to day in the year, and then you have this oddity in a leap year, where someone born in the second Adar could actually have their birthday or their year up before someone was born in the Adar Rishon. Now, Gemara says, Hainuhach, says, Antu Lamali, why do I need these two scenarios? Why do I need the scenario by the animals and by the Batei Arei Choma? Hainuhach, it's the same thing. Gemara says, Ma'adu Teimatam Dichtiv Tmima, Hachalok Tiv Tmima. By the Batei Arei Choma, it says, Shana Tmima. So it says the word Tmima is modifying the word Shana. Now, by Korbanot, it does say the word Tamim or Tmima, but that's a reference to the animal, not to the Shana. And so there, maybe I would have thought, Hacha Deloktiv Tmima, by the Korbanot, lo, it would not be the case that you would have this din apply and that the Hebrew year would be counted. Kamash Malan, the Shana, Shana, Mehadade Gamre, you have a Gzeirah Shavah of Shana, Shana, and that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom brought over here, which is the, from the Korban of Pesach, says, Setamim Zachar Ben Shana. So that word Shana is a Gzer Shavah to the word Shana Tmima, that is written by Batei Arei Choma. Just like Batei Arei Choma are Miyom Liyom and Me'et Le'et, so too by Korbanot, it's Miyom Liyom, only 8 to 8. And then that goes back to what we saw in the first Talmud with the Balei Tosafot, as to whether this is uniquely associated with Batei Arei Choma and Korbanot, or is this then the word, as the Tosafot says, the word Shana, now means, anytime you have a Gzer Shavah of Shana Shana, anything that requires Shana is going to be subject to this rule and has broader application than just Batei Arei Choma and Korbanot. Right now the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan. Shomer Tmima, Rabbi Omer Liten Shana Ibura. Tana Rabbanan. We have a Braita. Shana Tmima, Rabbi Omer Monesh, Losh Meot V'Shishim Chamisha Yamim, Kiminyon Yimot HaChama. So here Rabbi makes it clear that when he said Shana V'Ibura, he meant a solar year, 365 days. Chachamim omrim, moneh, 12 chodesh, miyom liyom, v'nitabra, nitabra lo. You count day to day in 12 months. If there is a leap year, the leap year is in his favor, meaning in the seller's favor, and he gets extra time to redeem the field. So it's either going to be for him 12 lunar months or 13 lunar months according to the Chachamim. Reaches the 12th month that day and he doesn't redeem it, then it goes permanently into the hands of the buyer. Tan Rabbanan, litzmitut. What does it mean that it's litzmitut? Lechalutin means something that will be permanent, irreversible. The sale will be something that he cannot change. Davar acher, litzmitut, lerabot et amatana, comes to include a gift, that a gift too, after a year, will become a permanent gift and he will not be able to reverse it. My taima, what's the reason? Samit, smitut. He could have written samit, since he wrote smitut, you have two limudim out of here. One to teach you that it's permanent, and the other one to teach you that not only is it permanent for a mecher, it's also permanent for a matana. Amru Rabbanan kamed Rapapa. The Rabbanan suggested for Rapapa, kiman, the authorship of this Mishnah is the local Rabbi Meir. It's not Rabbi Meir's opinion. The Rabbi Meir, Omer, matana, inu kamecher. Rabbi Meir believes that a matana and a mecher are totally different items, and that what's true of mecher is not true of a matana. And so over here, mecher would be affected by the rules of Batei Rechuma. Matana would not be. Amra Papa, filu taima Rabbi Meir. Even Rabbi Meir could agree here, Shani Hocha, the Rabbi Rachmana, let's meet out. Over here you have a specific ribui that says matanot are included. You're right, in general, if we have no specific instructions and it speaks about mecher, then matana is not included. But here we have a specific ribui for matana, even Rabbi Meir would agree. Amra Rabbana Rabbi Papa, Vamar La, or Amri La, Ravuna Braid the Rabbi Yeshua the Rabbi Papa. So the Rabbanan said the Rabbi Papa, or some say it was Ravuna Braid the Rabbi Yeshua said the Rabbi Papa, Vagabe Yovel Dichtib Tashuvu. We learn from the word teshuvu ish elachuzato that the teshuvu, that extra limud, l'rabot et matana. There we have a ribui as well to tell you that matanot are also subject to yovel. Rabbi Meir lo kamerabe. And even though we have a specific ribui, Rabbi Meir still says over there a matana is not subject to yovel and does not have the same din as a mecher. El halavadai delok Rabbi Meir. So it's obvious that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir, even though we have an extra limud to teach you that matana is kemecher. Rabbi Meir, even in the face of that limud, believes that matana is different than mecher, just like by Yovel. He says matana is different than mecher, even though we have a riboy for matana. So over here, he's going to say matana is different than mecher, even though we have a riboy for matana. Tan Rabbanan, ha-makdish bayit bebatei arei chuma. Person who is sanctifying, is makdish, the bedek bayit, his house in the ir chuma. Ha-reyazeh goel, ve-goel le-olam. This person has a right to redeem it, and he can redeem it forever. Ga'alo acher miyad hekdesh. If a third party came and redeemed it from hekdesh. So here, this person is makdishit. It goes to the gizbar of hekdesh. If the gizbar of hekdesh now sells it to another party, then, higia yom 12 chodesh v'no negal, hayachalut lo. If within that 12-month period that it was sold, if he doesn't come and redeem it, then it becomes a permanent sale to him. So from the point in time that this buyer bought it off of hekdesh, 12 months later, it becomes his permanently. The Gemara says, "Menahani milik." How do you know that's the case? Amashmol damakra lekone oto. That it is to the buyer of it. After 12 months, he gets to keep it permanently. Bafilu miyad hekdesh. Even if you're buying it from hekdesh. Whoever is the buyer of the field, they are entitled to get a 12-month clock, and if the 12 months elapse, it becomes theirs permanently. So, Reuben was makdishit. It went to the Gizbar of Hekdesh, and the Gizbar of Hekdesh sold it. So the first sale that happens here is from the Gizbar of Hekdesh to whoever bought it, whoever redeemed it from Hekdesh. So that's the clock got started then, and the clock starts in favor of that buyer. So Gemara says, why don't we say, V'lach l'chalte Hekdesh? Why doesn't Hekdesh get that benefit? Why doesn't it go to Hekdesh in that case, and they get it after the 12 months? Because technically, they are the quote-unquote first buyer over here, because the person is makdishit, it's as if he gave it as a matana to Hekdesh. So why don't they get a clock of 12 months by which it becomes Hekdesh's permanently versus the Hekdesh selling it to a third party where it becomes the third party's permanently? Where it says, Amakra lidorotav. Because it says, it would go litzmitut lekoneoto lidorotav lo yitzei beyovel. To their descendants, to their generations. Yatz Hekdesh and lidorot. Hekdesh doesn't have generations, doesn't have children. So that can't be the din of Kone Oto, can't be for Hekdesh. Lo yetzei biyovel, it doesn't go out in the Ovel. Lomali, why do you need to tell me that? If you say it's the Tzmitut, it's forever, then obviously it doesn't leave in the Ovel. Am Rav Safra lo nitzrucha ela mocher bayit bibatei arei chuma, upaga bo yovel. A person sells his house in a arei chuma, in an ir chuma, And then before the year elapses, he bumps into Yovel b'toch shnato, within that year. Salkadat chamina lipok b'yovel. You would think it would go out on that Yovel. Kamash malan, lo yitzei b'yovel. So the pashtut of pasuk is that once the year elapses, it's permanently in the hands of the buyer. Lo yitzei b'yovel means in the subsequent Yovel, it will not return to the seller. It remains with the buyer permanently. That's the pashtut of pasuk. But the Gemara says, you don't need to tell me that. If it's permanent, that obviously means that it's not coming back in the Yovel. So they now change it that the lo yitzei b'yovel is not after the 12 months, but during the 12 months. If a Yovel falls out during the 12 months, that house is not subject to the rules of Yovel, by which it would be released to the original owner, but rather it stays with the buyer, and the only factor here is the 12 months. Up to 12 months, the seller can buy it back. After 12 months, it permanently becomes the buyer's property. All right, next Mishnah. Berishona haya nitman yom 12 chodesh. So in the beginning, the purchasers used to run away and not be available at the end of the year, so that the sellers couldn't come back and redeem the house from them, so that it would then remain in their possession permanently, in order that the sale becomes permanent, and the seller loses out. Hitkin Hillel. Hillel established, Shehei Cholesh Ma'utav Lishka, as Rashi says over here, that Cholesh is Kamo Cholesh Al Goyim, that Metilin, Kalashim Ala Kodoshim, you place the monies. Matil ma'utav l'lishkot shebazara. You throw your money into the treasuries or into the storehouses of Ekdesh. The Rabbeinu Gershom says, into a particular area that was designated for this purpose. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot says that the word cholesh over here comes from cholesh ma'utav efshar she'ei minyan v'yachalosh Yoshua et Amalek. V'yachalosh v'hei perusho shemar'eh ma'utav l'lishka. He shows his money. He makes available his money to the Lishka of Hekdesh, or he says, "V'efshar shu l'ashom yuchad l'netinat ha'maot." Maybe it's a specific verb for giving of money, and the verb is cholesh, which means to give money from one party to the other. Or in essence, you give the money into this designated location controlled by Beitin, v'shoveret ha'delet v'nichnas, and then you break down the door and enter back into your house. Or in essence, v'imatay shiyotzeh, whenever the buyer wants to, whenever the buyer so wishes, he can come and pick up his money that was used for the redemption. Or in essence, what Hillel did was he created a conduit by which you didn't need to get the money to the buyer. You simply had to get the money into this escrow or trust account. Once you did that, you were then given the right to re-enter your house so people didn't play games by hiding and not allowing you to repurchase or redeem the field. This Mishnah becomes very pivotal in a machloket Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam, which I mentioned actually a couple of daf ago, from the Gemara in Gittin and daf Lamed Vav. And that is the Gemara over there says that with regards to Yovel, that Shmita Ksafim is connected to Yovel. When the Yovel is in practice, then Shmita Ksafim is Doraita. When the Yovel is not in practice, then the Shmita Ksafim is only Midrabanan. And the Gemara in Gittin asks the following question. How could Rabbi be mitakein a prusbol to say that the Shemitah Ksafim should not take place when the Torah says it should take place? And the answer of the Gemara is that Shemitah Ksafim bizman hazeh is only midrabanan, not midoraita. And that, as Rashi explains, is because since the Ovel was not practiced, so Shemitah Ksafim was only midrabanan. And that's how Rashi explains the whole Gemara over there, that Hillel was doing this midrabanan. As Tosafot points out over here, Hillel lives during the time of Bayit Sheni. And that means that Rashi believes that during Bayit Sheni, there was no Yovel. The Yovel was not practiced during Bayit Sheni, and since it wasn't practiced during Bayit Sheni, Shemitah during Bayit Sheni was only Midrabanan. That makes Shemitah Ksafim Midrabanan, and that's why Hillel could be Mitake in the Pruzbol. That's how Rashi explains the Gemara. The Gemara does have a second answer over there, which is that the Chachamim have a right to be Oker Davar Min HaTorah, and that Hefker Beit in Hefker, and therefore Rabbi could institute Prusbolt even to undermine a Din Deoraita. But according to that view that Shemitah was Derabanan, Rashi comes with the following conclusion that the Yovel was not practiced during the time of Hillel. The Rabbeinu Tam, as I noted before, brings a number of proofs to that not being the case, and that's based on the Gemara that we saw the other day, that there are a number of halachot that are dependent on the Yovel. Evid Ivri, Batei Arei Choma, Stei Achuza. He listed a whole bunch of items that are connected to Yovel. When the Yovel is not practiced, these items are not relevant. Well, here we have a case of Batei Arei Choma. And Hillel is instituting a takana with regards to Batei Arei Choma, which means that the Batei Arei Choma were being practiced in the time of Hillel during Bayit Sheni. But Batei Arei Choma only work when there's a Yovel around. Rabbeinu Tam says, here's my proof that they did keep the Yovel during Bayit Sheni. The Rabbeinu Tam goes on to show in another case later on in Kri Tot, we're going to see that there was a situation in which there were problems of a Shifcha Harufa. And the din of a Shifcha Harufa is an Eved Ivri who married a woman who was a Chatzi Bat Chorin and a Chatzi Shifcha Knanit. And again, the fact that there was an Eved Ivri that we were dealing with is in the time of Bayit Sheni. Eved Ivri is only applicable when there's a Yovel. So once again, the Rabbeinu Tam shows from there that the Yovel was going on during Bayit Sheni. Otherwise, why would you have Batei Arei Choma, like our Mishnah over here, and the case of Kri Tot, which speaks about Eved Ivri, that shows you that all of these practices were going on during Bayit Sheni. That means that the Yovel was practiced during Bayit Sheni. Now, don't you have to have a requirement of Rov Yoshevei Aleha? So then how do you overcome that problem? And we know that when Ezra went up during the second coming to build Bayit Sheni, he only brings with him, as the Pasuk says, a little more than 40,000 people, which is clearly not Rov Yoshevei Aleha. So he says, V'tzarich lomar da'al korchach, ein hachanami, denagu yovlot b'bayit sheni. Yovel was practiced during Bayit Sheni, according to the Rabbeinu Tam. V'af agav d'chol Yisrael lo chazru b'mei Ezra. And even though all of Klal Yisrael did not return in the time of Ezra, nevertheless they practiced it. Miu, because shevet v'shevet chazru mitzatan. From every shevet there was a representative. V'ashapir kamal kol yoshevei aleha. And that's the equivalent of having all of Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. The huge chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam has major implications in terms of when the Yovel becomes the Oraita. According to Rabbeinu Tam, you don't need Rov Yoshevei Aleha, you just need a representative from each Shevet to be there. That's enough to be considered as if Kol Yoshevei Aleha. For Rashi, you need really Kol Yoshevei Aleha, or at least Rov Yoshevei Aleha, and without that, you're not going to have Yovel. So according to Rashi, the Yovel was not practiced during the Bayit Sheni, whereas according to the Rabbeinu Tam, Yovel was practiced during Bayit Sheni. Further, Rabbeinu Tam, it makes it easy to understand our mission over here, that speaking about Batei Arei Choma and Hillel being metaking something, which means that there was a practice of Batei Arei Choma during Bayit Sheni, and similarly with the Gemara and Kri Tot with regards to Eved Ivri. The real problem for the Rabbeinu Tam is the Pruzbal. Gemara over there says that the Pruzbal Hillel put into place is because Shemitah Ksafim was Midrabanan. But why was Shemitah Ksafim Midrabanan? If they were practicing the Yovel, then Yovel makes it that Shemitah's Doraita. And if Shemitah's Doraita, then Shemitah Ksafim's Doraita. How did the Gemara say that it was Shemitah Midrabanan? Where was the Shemitah Midrabanan? So Rabbeinu Tam goes up with a huge chiddush and says that Rabbi instituted Pruzbal, even though it was not necessary or couldn't be used in his time because the Shemitah was Midoraita, but he anticipated the Churban HaBayit, and in anticipation of the Churban HaBayit, he instituted Pruzbal so that when Shemitah Ksafim became the Rabbanan, the Pruzbal would be effective. That's a huge chiddush. The Rabbeinu Tam has that chiddush, as well as the chiddush that if a representative from every shevet there, that's enough to be classified as Yoshevei Aleha for Yovel to be Doraita. Therefore, according to Rabbeinu Tam, the Yovel was practiced in Doraita during Bayit Sheni, and that will have implications with regards to our upcoming Gemara, which in tomorrow's daf we're going to say, Manu Yovlot B'Kadesh Shmitim is only Midrabanan. But we should count the Yovlot B'Kadesh Shmitim Midrabanan, and not Midoraita. So that's a little hard reading into the Gemara that we're going to see tomorrow, because there it seems to be Manu Yovlot to Gadei Shmitim, which would bring it up to a level of Deoraita. We'd already discussed previously what the Rabbeinu Tam thought the Havamina and the Maskana of the Gemara were there, and what the difficulty was with that. So that's actually an important factor over here. Now the Gemara begins. Amar Rava, mitakanato shel Hillel, harizeh gideich, almanat shetitni li 200 zuz. The person gives a woman a bill of divorce, on condition that he pays him 200 zuz. If she gives it to him and he accepts it willingly, then the divorce is effective. Bal korcho, if she gives to him against his will, he does not want to accept it, and she forcibly puts it into his possession. For instance, she throws him into his house, or she puts him into his chatzer mishumeret. So then, ain migureshet, she's not divorced. How do I know that? Me, the itzrik lay the Hillel etkune netina bal korcho. The fact that Hillel has to institute that by batei arei choma, giving the money against the will of the buyer
havia netina. It works in that case. Habama netina, bal kocho lo havia netina. That shows you that in general, it doesn't work. The fact that he had to institute it to work in this particular case shows you that otherwise it wouldn't work. And that means by the case of the woman, if she gives it to the man against his will, it's not going to be effective. Matkiv la Rav Papa v'itema, either Rav Shimi ba'ashi or Rav Ashi, v'dilma, it's tzricha le'hila litkune shelo b'fanav. Maybe Hillel's institution is in a case where the person's not available. Like in our case over here where the guys used to run away on the last day of the year, and then you're trying to do two things. You're trying to give it to him against his will, without his really wanting to receive it. In addition to that, he's not available. He's not in front of you. So maybe that's why Hillel had to institute the takana over here. Aval bifanav, if he was present, then ben midato, ben bal kocho havia matana. It would have worked. So your proof from the Mishnah is not necessarily true, because the Mishnah might be particular to the case where the person's not present. In the case of the get, where the man's present, then the woman's giving it to him against his will might have been effective, and even Hillel would agree that it would be effective in that case. Igadam, right? Some have it just the opposite way around, which is Amarava. Mitakanato shalel arei zegitei chomenat shetini li matayim zuz unat alo bemidato bembakocho avinitina. From this takana of Hillel, from our Mishnah, you can learn that if a person gave a bill of divorce on condition that the woman pays 200 zuz, and she pays it, whether he receives it or whether he gets it without his acquiescence, meaning he put it into his possession, havianitina, it works. Hillel only needed to institute this when the buyer was not present for the seller to give him the money. Aval bifanav, had he been present, ben midato, ben bal kocho, it would have worked either way. And therefore, havia netina, and it would have been a good netina. That's why they changed the gear so above. V'dilma, ben bifanav, ben shelo bifanav, midato in, bal kocho lo. Maybe the rule is, and even Hillel agrees, we're indifferent between whether the person is present or not. If it's with the acquiescence, it works. Bal kocho lo, it does not work. So then, Hillel, why did he only institute it? Because the people were not here. Is by the Yitzchak Leitakin. He instituted when there was this issue, which is that in general, the problem wasn't that the person was present and they were giving it to him, or then they weren't accepting it. The problem was that they were taking off on the last day, so they didn't need to accept it. So he only needed to institute a takana for that instance when they were running away, because that was the common case or the common problem, and he put the gzera in place for that. So Tosfot comes up with a chiddush over here and says that the reason they ran away is because if the person brought them the money, they could have refused it according to Rava, but they'd be too embarrassed to refuse it in the context or in the situation that they were found. And that's why they ran away, so they didn't have to deal with the embarrassment of the problem of not accepting it. And that's why Hillel had to be mitakein, that you could put it into this treasury or into this escrow account in order for the transaction to be completed, because the buyers were running away, in order that they wouldn't be embarrassed to refuse it and not take it from the individual. But ain't al chanami. Had there been a problem of them being present and not accepting it, they would institute it for that as well. And you don't have any conclusive proof from Hillel's takana as to whether that's only shelo bifanav, or whether that's also applicable even bifanav. Now, Tosfot over here says, v'im tomar v'chi yitzrich lei l'avi raya azeh, why do you have to bring a proof to netina bal kocho l'avi netina? That when you give something to someone against their will, it doesn't work. Over here, you're giving them a matana, you're giving them a gift, you're giving them something. Why do they have to accept it? So why do you need Hillel's takana? You say, oh, from the takana of Hillel, we see that when you give it bal kocho, it doesn't work. That's a logical thing. Why would you think it should work? It says, that's what it says. You have to look at what the circumstances are, the context is. In the context of a gift that's given that has no strings or context around it, then the recipient of the gift doesn't have to take it. Bal kocho. You can't force the gift upon him. And even Rav Papa agrees to this. Ella, b'matana sheish bat tzorech pligei. It's in a case where the gift has purpose. And since the gift has purpose, can you now then force him to take the gift, even though he doesn't want to take the gift? And that's the machloket over here. That's the discussion over here, is in a situation where it's necessary to get the money to redeem the house. It's necessary to get the money for the divorce to go through. Yes, it's a matana again, but this is a matana that is bearing on other people, and there's a necessity to get the matana through in order for something to take place. In that case, you have a machloket as to whether you can effectively create a matana bal kocho in those situations. And Dosler points out that there also is another exception. If there is a obligation on the giver, then it would also be a netina even bal kocho. That is because there's an obligation for him to return it, and the recipient party can't refuse to take it back when there's an obligation for him to return it. And so therefore he can return it. So if there's context to why you have to give it, then over there, people will agree that you can give it against the will of the individual. When it's an obligation that you have to him, then you certainly can give it bal kocho. When it's a reshut or a matana that has impact halachically, then that's what we're discussing here, as to whether that should be effective bal kocho or not bal kocho, or should be fanav, shlo fanav. Should that make a difference? All right, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Bet, Amud Aleph.